Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Why do you reject Catholic morality? It's a pretty hot topic in today's society, and we have Trent Horn with us for another hour to answer your questions about it, or just take your answer to that question. If you are objecting to Catholic morality, and frankly, let's face it, there's a lot of us out there that do. Many of us who claim to be Catholics reject part of Catholic morality. We want to hear why, or we want to hear your question. Before we get to our calls, though, I do want to give you a little reminder about something that's happening later this year. It's the 500th anniversary of the Protestant Reformation and the Catholic Answers Conference. The theme this year is the reunification of all Christians. And Trent, you're going to be talking there. Tell us a little bit about the conference and what you'll be speaking about. This is going to be fantastic.
Yes. So this fall, you're going to hear on the news, in popular media, probably especially in the month of October, people talking about the Protestant Reformation. It's been 500 years since Martin Luther published his 95 Theses that ignited a major change in Christendom, in the Christian Church, especially in Western Christianity, and brought forth the Protestant Reformation, or what is often called the Protestant Reformation. And so this conference, what we're going to do is the theme is to talk about the reunification of all Christians, that the quote-unquote Reformation didn't help the church to become go back to its roots, to the deposit of faith. Rather, it brought forth a new gospel and other churches in competition with Christ's church and has caused a split. And what God wants, what Jesus prays in John 17, is that we, or Christians, may be one as he and the Father are one. And so we're going to talk about reuniting Christians. We're going to talk about what the Reformation was, who were the key players, how we can dialogue with Protestants on this issue. My talk is called Protestant Proofs for Catholic Truths. And so one element I think will be a lot of fun is I'm drawing from Protestant scholarship, both from the Reformation and modern, that supports Catholic teaching on things like Mary, purgatory, justification, and things like that. So when you talk to your Protestant friend, you can say, this Protestant is actually agrees with or is very close to Catholic teaching on these certain subjects.
Well, I'm excited about it. It's going to be great. It's September 28th through September 30th, right here in beautiful San Diego. And if you're not from California and you're wondering, when is really the best time to be in Southern California? It's not right now. It's not June. We have gloom in June. It's actually the worst. But September, I think, is probably the best month to be in San Diego. You will love the sun and the warm weather. We've got all sorts of wonderful speakers, not only Jimmy and Tim and Trent and Carlo and all your favorite apologists, but Mark Brumley will be here from Ignatius Press. My buddy Devin Rose is going to be here. It's going to be fantastic. And you only have a month to take advantage of early bird pricing. So go to CatholicAnswersConference.com and get your tickets right now. All right, let's go back to the phones, shall we? Jose from Denver, listening on 1060 AM. Jose, welcome to Catholic Answers Live. You're on with Trent Horn.
Thank you for taking my call and for all the knowledge you guys share every afternoon. I actually enjoy your program very much.
Thank you.
My question goes to the morality of the protection of life and now the argument that everybody has with the environment. I was born in Mexico, so I was always aware that abortion was a terrible thing and it was illegal until so long ago when the Mexican government decided to change it into, okay, let's make it legal, following the example of our great neighbor of the North. With that being said, now we have the argument with the environment. And my thing is, yes, we're supposed to take care of the environment and we're supposed to take care of life because both of them go together because we want to keep those babies alive. But if we don't take care of the environment, where those babies are going to live, and that's my main concern. I got engaged into one of those arguments on one of the Catholic News Agency page on Facebook. And it got so bad that someone even said Hispanics and blacks shouldn't be reproducing by the minute, because apparently we do. And I think it has to do a lot with in Mexico, they teach you that since we're Catholics, we're supposed to respect life and we're supposed to have all the babies that God wants us to have because it's His plan. Yeah. But at the same time, when I was in school in Mexico and also here, because I was the kid that I would have messed with all the chemicals inside the lab, I understood that we were, I mean, God gave us this green earth and we're supposed to take care of it. And
right, Jose, I want to jump in here because I think you're making a very good point. And first, I want to apologize if anyone, but especially the Catholic on a social media platform made such racist and horrible comments. That's certainly not the teaching of the church. What the Catholic Church teaches is that having children is a good thing. Now individual families should plan, understand, do I have the resources to care for a child? And so there's a responsibility in parenthood there, but it's always a good thing to bring life into the world for anyone, regardless of their race, especially to have children. Children are a good thing, and they bring joy and blessings to our earth. Now, when it comes to the issue of the environment, the church teaches that we as human beings, the rational minds that God gave us, and He has made us caretakers. So if you look back in the book of Genesis, Adam and Eve were called to be stewards of the Garden of Eden, and we are called to be stewards as well of the whole of creation God has given us. There's a great summary of this in the Catechism in paragraph 2415. It's talking about the seventh commandment, and I'll get why the seventh commandment deals with stealing. You know, thou shalt not steal. Now, what does environmentalism have to do with stealing? Well, if you think about it, if you pollute the earth, if you trash the earth, you have stolen something that belongs to a future generation, that our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren, they have a right to inherit what God has given to us, that God gave us an earth with clean water, clean air, animals, vegetables, things we need to survive. And we don't own it. We are caretakers of it, and we pass it on to the next caretakers. If we ruin it, we've stolen it from those who future generations. So paragraph 2415 in the Catechism says, the seventh commandment enjoins respect for the integrity of creation. Animals, like plants and inanimate beings, are by nature destined for the common good of past, present, and future humanity. See the point there? Use of the mineral, vegetable, and animal resources of the universe cannot be divorced from respect for moral imperatives. Man's dominion over inanimate and other living beings granted by the Creator is not absolute. So what that means is, you know, we can't trash the planet. We can't just torture animals for no reason. We have to be good stewards. It is limited by concern for the quality of life of his neighbor, including generations to come. It requires a religious respect for the integrity of creation. So what are we called to? We're called to protect the earth that we have. Now, that doesn't mean don't pollute whatsoever, because, you know, when you do certain things, you know, when I breathe, I'm emitting carbon dioxide. That can be considered a pollutant in high qualities. Rather, it's about maintaining that balance so human life and other life and the earth are able to thrive and flourish. But while doing that, we are called to protect the environment, but not through intrinsically evil means, like saying, well, there's too many people. So, you know, we're gonna use abortion, contraception, things like that, or unjust economic policies, for example. So that's what we're called to. And so I would recommend a good resource would be the Population Research Institute. They talk about environmentalism, but also about people who would use unjust means to protect the environment. Steve Mosher founded that organization, POP.org, or Population Research Institute. Definitely something to look at and to look in the Catechism, paragraph 2415, and others. Oh, and one last resource. You'll have to check out Pope Francis's encyclical on this subject. It's a long one, but well worth a read if you have a fair amount of spare time, published in 2015, Laudato Si, or on care and concern for our common home. So Laudato Si by Pope Francis. Go to the website, Population Research Institute would be another good resource there. So thanks for calling in, and hope we'll hear from you again if you have any other questions.
We appreciate it, Jose. We are going to get to the rest of our long list of callers when we come back. The topic is, why do you reject Catholic morality? 888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. You're with Trent Horn for the rest of the hour. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Don't you just love listening to Trent Horn? Did you know you can book Trent or any of our other great speakers to speak at your parish or special event? contact one of our seminar coordinators through the Speakers Bureau section on Catholic.com today to find out more information.
Hi, this is Catholic Answers Live host Cy Kellett, and I'm really excited to tell you about a special limited-time offer we've got right now on subscriptions to our award-winning Catholic Answers magazine. Sign up today during our annual subscription drive, and not only can you save big bucks off the normal price, you can get a collection of 5 exclusive audio presentations added to your order for free. Subscribe today at 818-487-2011 or online at Catholic.com. Sign up for a 1-year subscription and we'll give you $10 off the normal price. Better yet, become a 2-year subscriber and we'll up the ante by dropping the price $20 and sending you a customized Catholic Answers flash drive containing exclusive talks from a top-notch lineup of speakers, including Tim Staples, Carlo Broussard, Trent Horn, and Chris Check, and my talk on renewing the culture. That's a savings of $20 plus 5 brand new audio presentations when you sign up for a 2-year subscription to Catholic Answers magazine. Act now! This is our best offer of the year, and it's only available for a limited time. Subscribe to Catholic Answers Magazine before our annual subscription drive ends. Phone 818-487-2011 or go to Catholic.com today.
Pope Francis said, "All of us are called to mature in our work as evangelizers. We want to have better training, a deepening love, and a clearer witness to the gospel." St. Paul Street Evangelization's online school of evangelization will equip you with the tools you need to be an effective evangelist. We'll ask for a pledge of financial support, but if you're unable to give, we'll set you up for free. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Why do you reject Catholic morality? Trent Horn is with us. We've had a lot of great questions and comments so far, and we're going to continue that role with Steve in Presque Isle, Maine, listening on WEGP. Steve, welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Hi. Thank you very much. Trent, I'm confused by the question tonight. Why do you reject Catholic morality? What's the difference between that and Protestant morality or Buddhist morality? And why can't the church accept some leeway with other denominations?
Well, Steve, I think that we would understand areas of common agreement both with other religious denominations, other religions, and even atheists. I think many people would agree with some of the fundamental Ten Commandments: thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not murder. But the church has Catholic morality is the idea that the church proposes this is the way we ought to live, and we can know that through reason and also through revelation. Some things through reason, some things only through revelation that God has told us. And so that forms the basis of, we call it Catholic morality because it's through the Catholic Church. We know the fullness of how God wants us to live. Now, some of those things, as I said before, other Protestant religions will share with us, or even other religions, to honor God, for example, to honor one's parents. Many Protestants agree with us on abortion, but not all of them do. Some Protestants agree with us on contraception, but many don't. So I think there is a lot of overlap, but we would say, well, we've come to our understanding of what God has given to us, our teachings on morality. That's Catholic morality. There's agreement and differences, and we want to help people with our differences to come to see how good Catholic morality is on those particular issues. So we can have overlap, but ultimately truth, objective moral truth, it does divide people, whether they agree or disagree, and we hope people will come to agree with us and see that it's reasonable.
Does that help, Steve?
Thanks. Thanks very much.
We appreciate the call. Let's go to John, listening in Erie, Pennsylvania, actually watching us on the live stream on YouTube. John, what's your comment or question for Trent Horn?
Yes, sir, gentlemen. My question on topic of contraception, like say two people are married, they don't have enough money, and they can't afford children. I don't know what would be wrong with a husband and wife without, you know, have contraception before they have children. I mean, I don't know whom or whoever is indoctrinated in the Catholic Church not to have contraception. And, I mean, I don't know what's wrong with, you know, husband and wife pleasing each other in a good, moral, epic marriage way.
Mm-hmm. So, John, this is an interesting point that you bring up. You say, well, if at least for a couple that is experiencing a hardship, shouldn't they be able to use contraception? But in your own opinion, do you think contraception is ever wrong to use?
Is it ever wrong to use? Is it wrong?
Yes.
I don't think it's wrong, no.
Okay, so then for your perspective on the issue of contraception, it's not so much about the certain circumstance being involved. It's about whether you don't see anything wrong with it at all. So it wouldn't matter if the couple is poor or rich, or, you know, as long if they want to make each other feel good, what would that matter? So it seems then our big difference then is about whether contraception is right or wrong. And so what the Catholic Church teaches is that the marital act, the act of sexual intimacy between a husband and wife, in order to be a genuine marital act, it has to be full, free, faithful, and fruitful. So every time a husband and wife who are married, when they engage in the marital act and sexual intimacy, they renew the vows they made on their wedding day. For example, they renew the vow to be faithful. So, you know, they promise to only be intimate with their spouse. Even if there was something where their other spouse was sick for a long time, couldn't be intimate, no matter what, they promise to be faithful to that spouse. The other promise they make is to be fruitful, to be open to life, to not shut out God from their intimacy and allow the creation of life to at least be possible. And so the church teaches it's gravely wrong to contradict that fundamental element of the sexual act, which is being open to life. That if we use contraception or things like that, it frustrates its natural purpose. It would be like the wrongness of eating a bunch of food and then throwing it back up again so that you don't digest any of it. That kind of eating disorder would show that in sexuality, if you're not open to life, you're not allowing that act to reach its natural purpose. So that would be one argument that I would put forward there. I don't know what you think of that.
Can I ask a question? Where in the Bible does it, so I can look it up, does it speak against contraception? Do you know, perhaps, Mr. Horn?
Where does the Bible speak against contraception? Well, there's nowhere there's nowhere in the Bible that says thou shall not contracept. Just as the Bible doesn't say thou shalt not abort, thou shalt not look at internet pornography, thou shalt not hijack an airplane. But the Bible does talk about general moral principles. It includes an act of contraception. And the one case where a person uses contraception in the Bible, Onan, which I talked about in the previous hour, when he practiced coitus interruptus, God was greatly displeased by him doing this and struck him down for doing so. So I think that that's pretty bad right there. If the one instance of contraception recorded in Scripture, God was so displeased with it, he administered capital punishment to that person. So second, as a Catholic, we don't believe in sola scriptura. We don't believe that the entirety of faith and morality comes from the Bible. If you did, you'd have a hard time, actually. Protestants have many moral teachings, you know, on abortion, on even things like gambling or drinking or things like this that are not found in Scripture. If you restrict yourself just to the Bible, you will have a very limited moral theology. So that's a point I would make there. And I guess finally, I would just say that when we look at sexuality, people say, well, what's so bad about contraception? Anytime sexuality becomes disordered, and even Sigmund Freud, you know, someone who's not a fan of Christianity, recognize this, sexuality becomes disordered when it's isolated from its procreative use. So when people find that, you know, when people become intimate with objects, with animals, you know, with people of the same sex, people will say, well, that's not a disorder. Well, let's talk about objectophilia and zoophilia, objects or animals, things like that. Well, what makes it so disordered? Well, there's not any possibility for procreation there. That seems to be the simplest answer. And so, you know, it would naturally follow then that if human beings frustrate the procreative capacity of the sexual act, it becomes disordered in a similar way. So that, I think, was a way to look at it. I'd also recommend our caller to go to our website, Catholic.com, or to learn more about this, chastityproject.com or chastity.com, our website. to learn more about the church's teachings on those subjects. So hopefully that was helpful, and thanks for the call.
Yeah, we do appreciate it, John. You talked about the Chastity Project. I'm actually interviewing the Everts for a documentary I'm working on right now, Trent, about contraception. Now, this is something I learned doing research, and it speaks to a little bit, I think, John's question about the Bible. There's this misunderstanding, it seems to me, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's this misunderstanding among Protestant circles that contraception's just a Catholic issue. And I didn't realize until somewhat recently that basically every Christian in the world up until 1930, was against contraception. And not, I mean, along with Gandhi and Sigmund Freud and everybody else, but this is this is a very new subject. Do you just want to speak to that a second?
So even since the Protestant Reformation, and of course, we didn't have things like hormonal contraceptives, but people have been always trying to create different variants of barrier methods of contraception, practicing coitus interruptus, things like that, that Protestants, Christians were united in their opposition of contraception. They saw it as intrinsically evil, that it was a violation of the natural order of the intimate sexual act God had given to man and woman in marriage that is supposed to be life-giving. It's not purely for, as our caller mentioned earlier, pleasing one another. It's to be the full gift of self of man and woman to become one flesh. And one can't become one flesh if a barrier, physical or hormonal, has been placed in the way of that. Now, however, this changed in 1930 when the Anglican Church hosted their Lambeth Conference. They host this, I believe, every 10 years. And the conference came to the conclusion that contraception could be justified in very rare circumstances. And those basically being for a married couple experiencing severe hardship could be justified in using contraception, especially severe economic hardship. Now, why? Why in 1930? Well, what happened in 1929? A famous worldwide event.
Yeah, the great crash, the depression,
The stock market crashed, triggering a worldwide depression, the Great Depression. You have unemployment rates in the United States reaching something like 25%. I mean, people are starving to death, unable to find work, dying from illnesses. So there is a great calamity affecting the world. This decision by the Anglicans was not reached lightly. And so the Catholic Church was bearing this brunt too. And the Anglicans said, well, in light of all of these tremendous hardships, just in this minor case, economic hardship, married couples sparingly. But the problem is, I have a son who's, you know, I have a 2-year-old son. And there's a story every parent reads their 2-year-old over and over. If you give a mouse a cookie,
that's right.
If you give your 2-year-old a book, he's going to want another book. And is that, well, it's never going to stop there. It's just contraception, this tiny case. And then suddenly, it's just our caller, like our previous caller, what's wrong with contraception? It never just stops right there. Well, only abortion in this really, really, really difficult situation. And only that, though. Well, no, once you say that, well, this is not intrinsically evil, it's just evil by degree or circumstance, then you are going to get people debating about the circumstances, which is fine for things that are wrong by degree or circumstance, but not for things that have an intrinsic evil that cause disorder for sexuality or are affronts to human life.
Yeah, I was shocked to see how quickly the dominoes really fell, like you said, Trent, after the Lambeth Conference. By 1968, when Pope Paul VI comes out with Humanae Vitae, and the Catholic Church is the last one standing, like all of the Protestant denominations had fallen, it was sort of assumed that contraception was fine and that all Christians could be okay with it, and there was even some anticipation among Catholics at the time that okay, yeah, finally we're gonna follow, and we didn't. And the Catholic Church again still is the last one standing in many of these areas. It's a very interesting story, and one that I think obviously I think it needs to be told. I'm making a documentary about it.
I'm excited to see it. Do keep us updated.
Yeah, you can go to reversetherevolution.com to find out more, or donjohnsonministries.org. But also, just quickly before the break, it opened the door for all of the other arguments, didn't it? The same-sex marriage argument, the abortion argument, all of these things were really hinged on that contraception one, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, think about this. We have in the late 1950s, the early 1960s, the biggest thing, of course, would be the introduction of the birth control pill, or what has been called the pill. That, I think, put contraception just on a major platform for people to use on a continual basis, you know, to easily access from pharmacies or hospitals. And that helped to ignite the sexual revolution. And look what happens when sexuality – now, sexuality is not purely procreative in nature. You know, there's a unitive aspect. It should be. Husband and wife come together. It's important to bring them together as one flesh because you want them united for the children that may proceed from this union. But when you completely remove the procreative aspect, why do you need the unitive aspect? Why do you need to keep people together? If they're just exchanging things that feel good, why not let them do that with other married couples, open marriages? Why does it have to be with a man and a woman? Why not exchange feelings with whoever or whatever? When you disrupt our human nature and God's plan for sexuality, you get these unintended and disastrous consequences.
And it has been disastrous, absolutely terrible for the culture. All right, why do you reject Catholic morality? 888-318-7884, 888-31-TRUTH, and we'll be right back after this.
We're glad you're with us. Stick around for more Catholic Answers Live.
How do we know Jesus founded a visible, organized church? Is today's Catholic Church the same as the Church of the Apostles and the early Christians? What can I say to someone who claims the medieval church became corrupted by pagan ideas and practices? In 20 Answers, The Church, you'll find smart, solid answers to these questions and many more, helping you to understand how the church Jesus founded is able to carry on through history his mission of teaching and sanctifying his followers. 20 Answers, The Church, is part of the 20 Answers series from Catholic Answers, offering hard facts, powerful arguments, and clear explanations of the most important topics facing the church and the world. All in a compact, easy-to-read package. Visit shop.catholic.com today and take a look at this exciting new series from Catholic Answers Press.
Hi, this is Trent Horn, and I'm here to tell you about my new book, Hard Sayings, A Catholic Approach to Answering Bible Difficulties. Have you ever read something in the Bible that confused you? Or has a skeptic ever asked you to explain a scandalous passage and you didn't know what to say? Doesn't Genesis contradict science? Why does the Bible promote slavery? How could God order his people to kill women and children? It's happened to just about everyone. But now you have a place to turn for the answers. In Hard Sayings, I look at dozens of the most confounding passages in Scripture and offer clear, reasonable, and Catholic keys to unlocking their true meaning. After reading this book, you'll be equipped to answer the toughest questions skeptics ask about the Bible. So don't be left without an answer again. Order your copy of Hard Sayings today by calling 1-888-291-8000, by visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or by asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
What's stopping you from becoming a Catholic?
Why can't women become priests?
I don't understand why I have to earn salvation.
How is it possible that God created everything?
Why do I need to confess my sins to
why
a priest?
Why is the Catholic Church so unwilling to
The Catholic Church is too rich.
Catholics worship Mary and are
committed. As far as I'm concerned, all religions are equal.
You are called to communion with Dr. David Anders. Tonight, 11 p.m. Eastern, on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. My name is Don Johnson, sitting in for Cy Kellett. You can find out more about me at donjohnsonministries.org. Our topic for today is, why do you reject Catholic morality? We're here with Trent Horn. We have been for both hours and have been having a fantastic time. Let's go right back to the calls. Barbara has called in from St. Louis, Missouri, listening on Covenant Radio. Barbara, welcome to the show.
Thank you, gentlemen. My question has to do with the intersection of the duty to vote and Catholic morality. There are some issues, such as some laws proposed regarding immigration or helping the poor or war, and they're considered prudential. Thoughtful people can disagree, assuming a good conscience, a good intention. Then there are other issues, such as abortion and redefining homosexual coupling as marriage, and as you've been talking about, contraception. I can't remember the term, as opposed to prudential is another term, Catholics are obliged to oppose these. I have three questions, and the third is the most important. One, who decided into which group, the prudential or the obligatory group an issue goes, on two, on what basis, and lastly, and this is key, how is a Catholic to know which is which? Thank you.
Oh, so wait, so is who decided, how do Catholics know, what was the second question?
On what basis was the decision made?
Oh,
and most importantly, how are we Catholics to know if an issue is in the prudential group, where thoughtful people disagree, or if it's in the, and I'm, it's not, a, the other term isn't obligatory or mandatory, but a Catholic must always oppose certain issues. And I gave examples, you know, abortion.
Yes. Well, I would say that things like abortion, for example, things like euthanasia, there would be other issues as well, such as directly killing innocent people in war, for example, targeting innocent civilians in an armed conflict. And there's other issues that come down to bear about those things would be called probably intrinsic evils. So there are issues where there is an evil. Let's take poverty, for example. If someone is in poverty, they are suffering from an evil. It could be a natural evil, just that they lack resources that they really need. They could also be suffering from a moral evil, that through the bad actions or evil actions of another person, they are poor. So now poverty itself as an evil and addressing that, there's different ways we can do that. And so that issue of responding to poverty requires prudential judgment. Abortion, however, and other issues like it would fall under the category of intrinsic evils or non-negotiable issues. So, for example, on the question about whether abortion should be legal or illegal, that is something that's non-negotiable. A Catholic cannot support the legality of abortion. But let's say responding to poverty, someone says, well, I believe the best way to respond to poverty is through a flat tax or through a progressive tax plan. Now, a Catholic could vote for or against those things. They're not intrinsically evil. They'd have to use their best judgment formed by their conscience and church teaching to pick amongst those. Now, let me get through your questions. Who decided what's prudential and what's intrinsically evil? Well, at the basement level, I'd say God. That when God created the world, God is perfect goodness itself, and so he created us to be like him. He put within our human nature certain desires and certain things we have a right to according to our nature. So we have a right to life, a right to liberty. And so violating some of our fundamental rights, we can see from in nature just by reasoning about it, or in things like Scripture, when God says in the commandments, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not commit adultery. There are some things that are always wrong in and of themselves. And so that's something we know from reason and revelation. So that's who decides. Now, how do we come to know that? I would say that we come to know that by the church that Christ gave us. Christ gave us his church. And so the church teaches us, the magisterium of the church teaches us to know how we ought to live. And so you'd read something like the Catechism of the Catholic Church, or you would read an encyclical like Pope St. John Paul II's encyclical Evangelium Vitae, where he talks about the death penalty, for example, using language that is prudential, talking about what would be a good idea, but not necessarily binding. Then when he talks about abortion, he says, this is always wrong, and I invoke my authority as a successor of Peter and the universal magisterium of the church to say so. So I would recommend to see which issues are prudential and which are intrinsic evil or non-negotiable. Check out the Catechism, these encyclicals. If you want a nice short read that goes into that, go to Catholic.com and search for the Serious Catholic Voter's Guide, where we outline five non-negotiable issues in there. So the series, or just Google Serious Catholic Voter's Guide, and you'll get more on those intrinsic evils and how Catholics should respond to them. So thanks for calling, and I hope that was helpful.
Appreciate it, Barbara. Let's go to Anonymous, listening on EWTN in Colorado. Welcome, Anonymous.
Thank you so much for taking my call and for answering this question. I am unaware of having read anything in the Bible or the Catechism addressing artificial insemination, i.e., what would be the view of the Catholic Church on a situation of a heterosexual Christian woman approaching middle life and marriage being unlikely, experiences a compelling need to have a child, and through artificial insemination has a child, then converts to Catholicism? What would be the view of the Catholic Church on that situation?
Well, I would say if you want to see what the Church teaches, there's a document that was put out by the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith called Donum Vitae, the Gift of Life. And it talks about the use of artificial insemination and other procedures about creating human life and generating human life. To address that particular case, the framework I would use, I like to use this summary when people talk about assisted reproductive technology, things to help people become pregnant. The Church is not opposed to assisted reproductive technology or fertility medicines. So long as they assist the marital act, then they're okay or morally licit. So as long as, let's say you're using a medication to help a woman ovulate or help a man to be able to complete the sexual act who for some reason is unable to complete it, those would be morally licit. They help the marital act. They don't replace it with something else. So IVF, for example, a child doesn't come to be from the marital act. They're created in a laboratory by a technician. They're deprived the right of coming into existence in their mother's body through the life-giving love of the marital act. So in the case of artificial insemination, if you have a single woman who wants a sperm donor and she has the sperm placed into her body to fertilize and create a child, the Church would be opposed to that. Because what happens here? Is it assisting a marital act? No, there is no marriage at all. It's replacing it, and it's turned this child, instead of being a gift blessed as the result of a man and woman becoming one flesh, the child becomes a product, essentially, that's purchased and is actually, in many cases with artificial insemination, denied a right to a relationship with one of their parents, with their father. And that causes a grave injustice to the child. So with children, people say, well, it's not fair. She should be able to have children. Children are not a thing we have a right to. They're not. Children are a gift and a blessing from God. And we who have been blessed with children, mothers and fathers blessed with children, have responsibilities toward them and not place them in dire or unjust circumstances. So that would be what the Church would teach. Now, someone who is dealing with infertility or is unable to marry and has this maternal desire, that doesn't mean they can't express that desire. They can't be a mother to other people, a mother to other children in their community, in their church and family, that all of us, men and women, should practice our fatherly and motherly instincts with others. Some call to that in marriage, others call to it in different ways. And a great role model there would be the Blessed Virgin Mary, who, you know, was never intimate, perpetually a virgin, yet she's a mother to all Christians. And so I think that might be one way to look at that. So is that a helpful response?
Well, if that is the case, then the woman should not then, having been unaware of all the teachings,
so you're saying if she was unaware, but she went and did this anyways?
I think, Trent, the woman became Catholic later after she had done these things.
I'm sorry, repeat that?
I was just clarifying. I think you had mentioned that the woman in question had become Catholic later, so there would be a certain amount of she was unaware of Catholic teaching when she went through with the IVF.
Teaching on this.
Okay, yes. And so what I would say is that if somebody, all of us, I mean, I'm a convert myself, that when people engage in activities, if they're held responsible based on their culpability, part of that would be their knowledge. Did they know it was wrong? Now, ignorance is not a defense, a complete defense of doing wrong, but if a person didn't know something was wrong, then they wouldn't be as morally responsible. So if someone had a child through artificial insemination, and now they want to become Catholic, well, I mean, that child still exists, and that child has a right to parental care. And so a parent who, you know, has had a child in this way or through IVF should still continue to love and care and cherish and protect that child who is theirs. But what they may want to do, if you know, is if they're Catholic, to go to confession, to confess this sin, to amend for the wrongdoings, and you know, to find healing for being involved in this in the first place. So those who have been involved, who weren't aware that these things were wrong, and that could be many people, to seek out a priest in the sacrament of confession, and also seek out spiritual direction, and then to continue in providing for their parental responsibilities for the children that they've created.
Appreciate the call, Anonymous. I hope that helped. The topic for today is, why do you reject Catholic morality? And we will try to get a few more questions in after this break. You're listening to Catholic Answers Live. Trent Horn is the guest. 888-318-7884. 888-31-TRUTH. We'll be right back after this short break.
This is Harry Connick Jr., and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Hey everyone, this is Carlo Broussard, and I'm really excited to tell you about a special limited time offer we've got right now on subscriptions of our award-winning Catholic Answers magazine. Sign up today during our annual subscription drive, and not only can you save big bucks off the normal price, you can get a collection of 5 exclusive audio presentations added to your order for free. Subscribe today at 818-487-2011. Or online at Catholic.com. Sign up for a 1-year subscription and we'll give you $10 off the normal price. Better yet, become a 2-year subscriber and we'll up the ante by dropping the price $20 and sending you a customized Catholic Answers flash drive containing exclusive talks from a top-notch lineup of speakers including Chris Check, Tim Staples, Trent Horn, and Cy Kellett, and my talk, The Splendor of the Catholic Faith. That's a savings of $20 plus 5 brand new audio presentations when you sign up for a 2-year subscription to Catholic Answers Magazine. Act now. This is our best offer of the year, and it's only available for a limited time. Subscribe to Catholic Answers Magazine before our annual subscription drive ends. Phone 818-487-2011 or go to Catholic.com today.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. In Mark 12, in speaking to chief priests and scribes, Jesus told a parable about a man who planted a vineyard, dug a winepress, and built a tower which he leased out. Later, he sent a servant to the tenants to obtain some produce, but they seized and beat him and actually killed his son, whom he had sent later. Jesus then asked his audience how the owner should respond. They answered that he should put those tenants to death and give the operation to others. When he then quoted from Scripture, "The stone that the builders rejected has become the cornerstone," they realized that he considered them the tenants and he was the son. Unknowingly, they had convicted themselves. We need to pray for the wisdom to see those areas where we are quick to condemn others over deeds that we perform time and time again, and then we need to repent. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
And I'm Don Johnson, sitting in for Cy Kellett today. Let me make you aware of the Catholic Answers magazine. It is currently a great time to subscribe to the magazine. It is the annual subscription drive, the big push we do once a year. That means you get $10 off the normal price if you subscribe now, or if you can do a 2-year subscription, you actually get $20 off, and you get a customized Catholic Answers flash drive containing 5 exclusive talks from people such as our guest today, Trent Horn. Let me just throw that up there for the camera. I'm not sure which camera is on, but it's a beautiful magazine, a lot of great articles, including many of the topics that we've been discussing today. And our topic is, why do you reject Catholic morality? 888-31-TRUTH. Let's go right back to the phones. Pedro has called in from Chicago, Illinois. Pedro, welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Hello.
You're on, Pedro.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay, I just have a question. My question is, what's the position on the Catholic Church now on the commandment of do not bear false witness? Because with everything that you're seeing now, I mean, I think everything is a lie, and there's nobody to tell people what the truth is, and they're not supposed to be bearing false witness.
All right, Trent Horn.
Sure. What the church teaches regards that commandment, thou shalt not bear false witness, or thou shalt not lie, is that lying is an intrinsic evil. So lying is wrong. It's something we ought not do. It is disordered to the truth. So, it perverts the essential nature of what truth is, and in some cases it can cause grave harm. So the church has said that lying is always wrong, but it becomes tricky, though, in that Catholic theologians debate about, what lying exactly is. Because we could say this commandment when it's applied in a broad array of cases, it's quite obvious when it's being violated. If you sense that you're in trouble at school or at work or at home and you tell a lie to get out of being in trouble, you intentionally deceive that other person so you don't get punished for something that you rightfully did. Or if you lie on a form in order, you lie on your resume, you lie on your taxes so you can get money or defraud other people, you lie to commit fraud to steal other people's money, that's wrong, plain and clear. But there are cases where Catholic theologians disagree about whether saying something that is not true would be a lie in that case. Now, it's very clear, just because it's wrong to lie, it does not follow from that you always have to tell the truth. So paragraph 2488 of the Catechism, for example, says, "The right to the communication of the truth is not unconditional. Everyone must conform his life to the gospel precept of fraternal love. This requires us in concrete situations to judge whether or not it is appropriate to reveal the truth to someone who asks for it." So there could be a case where, people ask for the truth on a situation and we don't reveal it. We may say nothing, and that's not wrong. Just because you are forbidden to lie doesn't mean you have to give the truth. Or we may say the truth in a way that is not taken literally or not understood. And Catholic moral theologians call this a mental reservation. A classic one would be you're a child at home and you're home alone. Your child home alone, and somebody calls and says, "Hello, hi, young man, is your mother there? I'm from the vacuum sales company. I want to sell something." And of course, children should never say on the phone, "No, my parents are not home." But they might say, "Well, my mom is unable to come to the phone right now." And the person on the other end of the line could take from that the child was saying, "Oh, your mother's in the shower or the bathroom. She's there, but she can't come to the phone. I'll call back later." So the person could take from that something that's not true, but a lie. But the child didn't lie. He said it is true. His mother's unable to come to the phone. He just reserved or held in his mind the other part of the truth, which is because she's not home right now. Or, it's same as if you call somebody at their office and their secretary tells you, "He's not available right now," when the latter part of that may be, "He's not available right now to talk to you." So I would recommend you can look for, Google online, Catholic resources, lying, look in the Catechism under Part 3 in Article 8 on the Eighth Commandment, just on the general question about the Church's teaching on lying in general. I would say, look, honesty is the best policy. If you're not sure in a certain case, try not to say anything at all, or try to refrain from saying a lie or deceiving others. And if you're really in a bind, contact a priest, a spiritual director, or the apologist line at Catholic Answers if you need help in that respect. So thank you so much for calling.
Appreciate it, Pedro. So, Trent, you're telling me that when they say they're not available, it could just be they're not available for me. Is that...
It's true they are not able to come to the phone.
I get
they
that
have
all
not
the time.
But they have not, and you may assume it's because they're not physically there, but it may be for another reason.
It could be. Let's go to Brad in Mayville, North Dakota, listening on Real Presence Radio. Welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Thank you, guys. I just want to start out by saying I am a practicing Catholic, a convert as well. When I say this, I will always agree with the church. I will always defend her doctrines to anybody. On a personal level, though, I have a disagreement with the church's teaching on life when it comes to capital punishment. personally, I don't agree. I really, really don't agree. I think there are some cases where that punishment is warranted.
Oh, okay. Well, actually, that's what the church teaches as well, is that there can be cases where the death penalty is appropriate. Actually, the Catholic Church is not a pure abolitionist in this regard, that the death penalty is always wrong. For example, in paragraph 2267 of the Catechism, it says this: assuming that the guilty party's identity and responsibility have been fully determined, the traditional teaching of the Church does not exclude recourse to the death penalty if this is the only possible way of effectively defending human lives against the unjust aggressor. Now, it goes on to talk about how non-lethal means, if they're sufficient, should be used. But this would be an example of the Catechism articulating a prudential judgment in light of how capital punishment is often practiced, especially there is evidence, though it's been challenged, that capital punishment may be administered unfairly in certain cases. However, this doesn't represent a binding, infallible teaching. It expresses a prudential judgment that that capital punishment, we should be reserved in that, but it does allow it in cases where the common good or the defense of society require it. So actually, I would recommend for yourself, Brad, is to – there's a great new book just came out from Ignatius Press by Ed Feser, F-E-S-E-R. The book is called "By Man Shall His Blood Be Shed." Something like that. By man shall his blood be shed. Catholic teaching on capital punishment. Just search Ed Feser, Ignatius Press, death penalty, and I'm sure that you'll find it. He wrote it with another co-author, but it's a big, thick book, and it defends the traditional teaching on capital punishment, that the church can use it. And I think Feser actually argues with some regularity. So you can be a faithful Catholic. And Pope Benedict XVI has even said that Catholics can reasonably disagree, even with the Pope, on some of these prudential questions like the death penalty or war or things of that nature. So "By Man's Blood Shall Be Shed," Ed Feser, F-E-S-E-R. Check that out. I think that might help you a little bit on this issue. Is that a helpful explanation of what I gave?
That was extremely helpful. Like I said, I'm still new. I'm still learning.
Sure.
But I appreciate that clarification in that direction. I will definitely be looking into that.
All right. Thanks, Brad. And indeed, let me throw in another plug. Catholic Answers magazine for May, June has an article by Ed Feser and Joseph Bissett, who I assume is the other author of his
right.
new book. So an article in the latest Catholic Answers magazine. Let's quickly go to Anonymous watching on YouTube. Welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Hello.
Hi.
You're on.
Oh, great. This is the first time I've actually been able to call this number.
What's on your mind?
Okay. So I was wondering about this concept of forbidden books. I haven't found anything in the catechism about it. And I'm going to be honest, I'm a new convert. I'm trying to learn the catechism over time. So,
Anonymous, what would be the forbidden books? We're going to be running a little short on time here, so what would be some examples real quick for Trent to address here?
Sorry. I read a lot of books out of anthropological issues, like the Zohar, read the Satanic Bible. I don't find them very impressive. They're not persuasive. But I keep telling people keep telling me that I shouldn't be reading these books, even if I don't find them persuasive, when the only reason I'm reading them is for interest in anthropology.
Oh, sure. And no, the church does not have a rule against this. I mean, there was the index of forbidden books in the past, but that's not an ecclesiastical force now. And the church did that to protect the populace, to protect Catholics, especially lay Catholics who could be misled into error. However, I read many books that are heretical, that could be a danger to other people's faith. So as long as you're reading a book that does not become a danger to your faith, that's quite all right. In fact, there's a stamp I saw out there, a parody stamp you could put into a book. It said, heretical garbage, only useful for research purposes. So I want to stamp a lot of the books in the Catholic Answers Library with that. So as long as it doesn't cause a danger to your own faith and you're reading it for research, there's nothing wrong with that.
Very good. Thanks for the call. And if you're looking for a book that is certainly not heretical and will increase your faith, Why We're Catholic is the latest from Trent Horn. He has been our apologist today. My name is Don Johnson. You can find out more about me at donjohnsonministries.org. Until next time, this has been Catholic Answers Live. God bless.